जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपींजन वल्लभ गिरिवरदारी यशोधानंदन व्रज जन रंजन जामुना चिरामन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय विष्णु परमहंस परिव्राजगचर्य शुतुरशुत श्री श्रीमार सिवाय से श्री भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद की राजग्रंथ श्रीमा भागवताम की सामवेद भक्त वृंद की निताई गौर नंदी अग्लोरी सदी सुमन वरीस अग्लोरी से श्री श्री गुरैन गौरंग ओम ज्ञातमिरन्दस्य गणाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरुवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वायं रूपकदामयं ददाति स्वापदान्तिकं वंशकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिन्धुभ्यरेव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरी गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 7, Text 14, which is the last verse of this chapter. Paro raja savitur jata vedo Devasya bhargo manasedham jajana Sureta sada punaravishya chashte हम संग्रध्रानम निर्षरिंगिरामिमा पुरोरजासा वितुर जातवेदो देवास्य भर्गो मनसेधं जजाना सरेत साधा पुनरविष्ट चाष्टे Hamsam Gridranam Nirshad Rigiramima Gridranam Rishad Rigiramima Pararajo Savitur Jata Vedo Devasya Bargo Manasidham Jajana Sureta Sadha Punaravishya Chashte Hamsam Gridranam Nisharigiram Ima Nisharigiram Ima Hare Krishna. Beyond the mode of passion, situated in the pure mode of goodness, Savitu, of the one who illuminates the whole universe, Jataveda, from which all the devotees' desires are fulfilled, Devasya, of the Lord, Bharga, the self-effulgence, Manasa, simply by contemplating. Idam, this universe, Jajana, created, Suretasa, by spiritual potency, Ada, this created world. Puna, again. Avishya, entering. Chashte, sees or maintains. Hamsam, the living entity. Gridranam, desiring for material enjoyment. Nirshat, to the intelligence. Ringiram, to one who gives motion. Ima, let me offer my obeisances. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Translation, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated in pure goodness. He illuminates the entire universe and bestows all benedictions upon His devotees. The Lord has created this universe from His own spiritual potency. According to His desire, the Lord entered this universe as a Supersoul. And by virtue of His different potencies, He is maintaining all living entities, desiring material enjoyment. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Lord, who is the giver of intelligence. Purport, the predominating deity of the sun, is another expansion of Narayana, who is illuminating the entire universe. The Lord enters the hearts of all living entities as the Supersoul, and He gives them intelligence and fulfills their material desires. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Sarvasyachaham hridi sannivishtaha. I am sitting in everyone's heart. Bhagavad Gita chapter 15, verse 15. As a Supersoul, the Lord enters the hearts of all living entities, as stated in Brahma Samhita, chapter 5, verse 35. Adantarasta paramanu chayantarastam. Quote, He enters the universe and the atom as well. End quote. In the Rig Veda, the predominating deity of the sun is worshipped by this mantra. Dyeya sada savitri mandala madhya varti narayana sarisijasana sannivishtaha. Narayana sits on His lotus flower within the sun. By reciting this mantra, every living entity should take shelter of Narayana, just as the sun rises. I guess we get that in by chanting Hare Krishna. Just as the sun rises. Same benefit. Due to the sunshine, all planets are... Oops, I think I missed a sentence here. According to modern scientists, the material world rests on the sun's effulgence. Due to the sunshine, all planets are rotating and vegetables are growing. We also have information that the moonshine helps vegetables and herbs grow. Actually, Narayana within the sun is maintaining the entire universe, therefore... Narayana should be worshipped by the Gayatri Mantra, or the Rig Mantra. Thus, in the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 5th canto, 7th chapter, of the Srimad Bhagavatam, titled, The Activities of King Bharata. Hare Krishna. So the nice thing about Vedic culture is they knew that behind all their activities there was a maintainer, namely the Supreme Lord. Unlike the modern mindset, which thinks that I am the Lord of all my activities and I am the master of the results. I am the cause of the results. So this is the difference between even a materialistic person in Vedic culture could understand that there was a higher cause behind the results of their activities. Thus, there was a culture of gratitude, minimally yajna. The idea of yajna is to acknowledge that there is a personality behind all the affairs of this material world, particularly in context of what's being mentioned here. Behind the affairs of maintenance, there's a supreme person behind those affairs. If we didn't have sunshine, moonshine, fresh air even, water, so many minerals and other elements which the material scientists manipulate to create their gadgets and toys, then we couldn't live, we couldn't survive. And they cannot manufacture these things. They can manipulate atoms and certain elements of the material world, but they can't manufacture. So in Vedic culture, they can understand this, so they would worship the Supreme Lord by yajna. You can say it was a culture of gratitude. Essentially, Krishna mentions this yajna in chapter 16, Bhagavad Gita, and he points out that there's a cycle behind yajna. And essentially, what is sin is to take from the Supreme Lord but not offer anything back in yajna. That is essentially what sin is. Even if you want to enjoy the material world, Krishna's not envious of you. Someone may think God is envious because the God of the Bible is sometimes portrayed to be a jealous God. We used to hear like this. I don't know how that would be possible, but He was portrayed in that way. But God is actually not envious of our paltry sense gratification program. He's doing sense gratification to the max in the spiritual world. And what is our little sense gratification compared to Krishna? So He's not envious of our attempts for a sense enjoyment. But He's giving certain rules to make sure that you can get that sense enjoyment with the least possible difficulty. So actually, He's even a well-wisher. in our attempts to enjoy material sense gratification. But the living entities in the modern world, they don't accept that because they think that nature is ultimately impersonal. Therefore, they don't acknowledge the personality who's helping them to get everything in this material world, namely Narayana, or the super soul in the heart, or the expansion of Narayana in the sun. So this is the basic idea. We hear how once Mahaprabhu had asked Srivasa Thakur, I see you're not working any job. and you're not having, and he had a big family also. You have a big family, you're not working any job. I find it quite remarkable that you're maintaining everything. How is it possible that you're maintaining? Nowadays, people will say like this, that how can we do spiritual life if we have hungry stomachs? So our first business is to feed the hungry stomach, and then we can talk this self-realization later. But the only thing is they neglect self-realization and they still have hungry stomachs. Prabhupada says this in Isha Upanishad. So they end up double losers. So Mahaprabhu was also wondering, you also don't seem an anxiety about if someone doesn't have a job today, how so much anxiety will be there, how to maintain. They can hardly chant Hare Krishna. They can hardly think of Krishna. They're just thinking how to survive. And in fact, the modern world kind of creates a situation where people will be so much threatened by fear of survival that they wouldn't be interested in spiritual life. They actually create a situation like that to make persons afraid. So that way they will never take spiritual life. Because you need somewhat of a peaceful mind to practice spiritual life. Therefore, Krishna says for the yogi who is short-term practice in chapter 6, so he takes birth after enjoying the heavenly planets, he may take birth in the family of aristocrats. And many a times we may think, oh, what is this? That seems like a punishment. Because if I'm in a family of aristocrats, then I'll enjoy a lot more because I have the facility. But the idea is that your mind can actually be peaceful enough to pursue spiritual life when you don't have to worry about so many material arrangements. So in the modern world, they create a situation of scarcity in order to prevent people from actually taking shelter of the Supreme Lord. Anyway, so Mahaprabhu, he told this point. Oh, he was inquisitive. How is it that you're maintaining? You have big family, big houses there. And you don't even seem that you're in anxiety about it. You seem like totally peaceful, just absorbed in kirtan, arranging kirtan for other devotees. How are you managing to be peaceful and not making any arrangements? So then Srivasa to that, he clapped three times. You know, one, two, three. I can do it. So Mahaprabhu said, what does that mean? What type of answer is that? So he said, he clapped his hand and, if on the first day the Lord shall not maintain me, then we will tolerate that day. That day we will tolerate. If on the second day the Lord shall not bring anything to maintain us, food, stuffs, and so on, then on that day we will also tolerate. Me and my whole family, we all tolerate. And you go, on the third day, if the Supreme Lord does not bring anything to maintain, on that day also we will tolerate. But on the fourth day, if the Lord does not provide anything, then we all drown in the Ganga. We all drown ourselves in the Ganga. So Mahaprabhu found his faith pretty miraculous. Don't try that at home, folks. this is an extraordinary faith. Of course, it is a fact. The Supreme Lord will maintain. But one should act according to his realization. Otherwise, destruction is the only result of imitation. Imitation means without the substance you're trying to apply something of the great souls. Then Sukadeva Goswami says only destruction extends from that. So we don't want to imitate, but we do want to accept the essential principle that of the confidence that the Lord is my maintainer. Similarly, another incident in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that's a good example of this is when the hunter, there was one hunter there who was half killing all the animals. And so Narada Muni was seen as, what is this? This is nonsense. How can a person be so cruel? At least kill the animal all the way. Why half killing? So he saw the one hunter who was doing that, Megari the hunter. He was half killing all the animals. So Narada Muni preached to him, why this half killing business? You should kill them fully. This is a very cruel thing. He said, my father has taught me like this only. I have disciple succession. I am following as I have learned it. So this is the way we were taught. So Narada Muni gave him, I don't know if it's, so Narada Muni preaches to so many people, I get a little bewildered sometimes. It was either the Megari the hunter or maybe it was Valmiki. I don't remember. Anyway, I want to say somehow that he gave Magari the Hunter a PowerPoint presentation of the type of hells he's going to go to for his cruel activity. I don't know if it was Magari the Hunter, maybe in Valmiki. He preached to different persons of similar natures. And in both cases, and I think also King Barhishat, we were hearing, maybe it was King Barhishat in the fourth canto, Narada Muni likes to give PowerPoint presentations of the various hells that people will be going to on account of their sinful activity in order to cogently convince them to surrender to Krishna. Because generally living entities need visual. Audio is not sufficient. And we've observed in the Bhagavatam classes, the audio just doesn't seem to be very efficient. But when you have a visual, it seems to be more effective, right? And they have so many statistics now also saying that the visuals will help and so on. So Narada Muni is very expert in giving visual presentations also, coupled with his audio presentation, and telling them of the various types of hells they would go to for their simple activity. So when Magari the Hunter saw that, he immediately surrendered, of course, understanding that was his only recourse. And so then he inquired from Narada Muni, well, what should I do? Now, you know, so first thing Narada Muni told him to do was break his bow. So to this, he was concerned because that was his means of livelihood. If I break my bow, how will I maintain myself? So Narada Muni said, do not worry, I will make all arrangements for you, but you just break your bow. So he cannot be certain. Of course, Narada Muni is a saintly person, but Narada Muni did not detail how he was going to make arrangements for him. If it was us, we might want to know the detail. Okay, you will make arrangements. That's very good. Can you share a little bit more with us? What will you do exactly? Who's going to be coming? What times of the day are they going to be arriving? What type of boga are they going to be bringing? We won't be satisfied with just, we'll make the arrangement. We'll be quite disturbed, in fact. Like some of us are going to Gita Nagari, and suppose we were asked, we'll make all the arrangements for you. Now, okay, that's nice, but I need other details in order to feel peaceful in the heart. You know, especially the day of the trip you're leaving, you see that no one's in the kitchen, and you become quite concerned, actually. So Narada Muni told, don't worry, we'll make all arrangements. I'll make all arrangements for you. You just break your bow. So he had to place faith in Narada Muni, which he did. And of course, by his faith, Narada Muni, of course, made all arrangements for him to make, and he was maintained. In fact, he was maintained more than he required. He was actually quite bewildered how to use all the things that was coming for him. So this is another good example of confidence and personalities for one's maintenance. In the foreground of the material world are our various activities, which we tend to think is the all-in-all in terms of the cause of activities. Krishna says this in the Bhagavad Gita, right? Prakriti hi kriyamani. Ahankara vibhunatma. Due to big ahankara, false ego, we think that our activities are the all-in-all and the bringing about of so many results in the material world. In fact, we think, without me, how would living entities manage? It would be quite difficult. Especially if you get settled into a place for some time and you're doing a lot of sevas, let's say, then you think, I'm so valuable to this infrastructure. If I was not there, how would people maintain? It would be quite difficult. I mean, they might be able to manage, but it'd be quite difficult. I remember thinking like this when our temple is in the best condition that it's ever been. But previously, it was not in such good condition. And I thought myself a sincere and serious devotee. Just, generally, that's what you think when you're fresh. As you make advancement, you realize so many insincerities are there. Anyway, I was thinking I was very much essential for the maintenance of the activities in Kishore Temple. I've told this before. So I went to New Vrindavan for 1 month, because Radhanath Maharaj would be in New Vrindavan usually for 1 month, so I would go and spend time with them for 1 month. So I was wondering, how are things going on in Chicago? They must be managing with great difficulty. And I was thinking this way, because probably speaking, I would be the only one coming to Mangalarti. I'd be the only one giving classes that time, because many devotees wouldn't even come for classes and so on. So I was thinking, they must be managing with great difficulty without me. Anyway, that separation makes the heart grow fonder, you know, in this way, arrogantly thinking. So then when Mariah Chaitanya came to New Vrindavan to personally make sure I came back to Chicago. So I took that as further evidence that, yes, they are needing me. Therefore, Mariah Chaitanya has personally come to bring me back. He told also he had personally come to bring me back because they were afraid that I might ditch, because that's not out of the ordinary for brahmacharis. It's not out of the ordinary, and it's kind of moving for brahmacharis to go somewhere and not come back. Therefore, temple presidents are very scared to send their to too many festivals. They don't, because you know, you be in the same temple, you feel a little down, and you go to a festival, and they said, "This is the life, you don't come back." So Maharaja Chaitanya Prabhu, he made sure I was going to come, and he personally came. So when we were driving back to Chicago, I said, "Prabhu, so how are things managing in Chicago without me? How are things going?" And Maharaja said, "Oh, we didn't even know you were gone." Of course, externally, I maintained sobriety. They rushed to turn the muhya tea, but I was muhya. I was totally bewildered. I mean, what is... And so then, of course, I don't know if I had the realization that I'm not essential for the maintenance. I was just thinking, he's an illusion, therefore you cannot understand. But the devotee who was chaining me up that time, Revati Nandana Prabhu, he used to often say to me that you are not indispensable. That was like, aside from the Maha Mantra, that was another mantra he would chant. For my benefit, though. He wouldn't chant for himself. He would say, you can be sent out on the street and Krishna can replace you right away. You're not at all indispensable. So then the idea they try to inculcate is that our serving Krishna is a privilege. It is not that Krishna requires us for his maintenance. Exactly the other way around, you know, because one is thinking, oh, the deities are immobile, so therefore if we don't take care of the deities, how would they manage, how would they take care of themselves? But the Supreme Lord is nijalabhapurna. He is self-satisfied. That means that there is nothing external that he requires for his maintenance, unlike the living entities ourselves. We require so much support for our maintenance. But the Supreme Lord is not like that. And he's nijalabhapurna. He has so many living entities ready to maintain him. And also he does not require them also. He can maintain himself. So then, as one progresses in his understanding, then one realizes that our serving Krishna is actually a privilege. It is not our birthright, so to speak. It is actually our privilege. And with such an attitude, then you can render service with the necessary humility, which qualifies a thing as service. You can hardly say it's service without humility. You know, it's just like, excuse me, Prabhu, you know, what is this? Here's your prasadam, you like throw it down or something. You know, service has to be rendered with humility. But humility is not just a mental, how you say? Arrangement, how you say? Huh? Yeah, imposition or adjustment. Let me just shift, now I'm in the humble state of mind. To be in a humble state of mind, you have to actually have realization. Otherwise, I often like to make this point, you can't imitate beyond your adhikar as much as you may try. So when it's just a mental, therefore we say this verse is there, harava bhaktasya katama haguna manodite nasatodavatobahi, that the non-devotees have no good qualities. Generally as non-devotees ourselves, when we first came to the Krishna conscious movement, hearing that was very pinching. Wasn't it? I don't know if you have that experience of hearing that for the first time. That if you're not a devotee, you have no good qualities. It just kind of was reminiscent of the Christians. If you're not a Christian, then you have no good qualities. So I remember the first time hearing that from a devotee. If he's not a devotee, he has no good qualities. And you will feel a little offended, especially you might be appreciating some non-devotee for some exhibiting some good quality. Actually exhibiting some good quality. And then you say, he was doing this, and you're appreciating. And then a devotee said, he has no good qualities because he's a non-devotee. And the mind will become very much irritable hearing that, because we are also in the stage of non-devotee, you know, the non-devotee bhav, so we would get a little irritated hearing that. But the bhavatam qualifies the statement by saying manorata, because he's on the chariot of the mind. So when the mind is in a certain circumstance, it may exhibit a certain good quality, but you change the circumstances and then it exhibits another nature. And it can be altogether opposite of that other nature. Therefore, they have no good qualities because they're on the mental platform. And the modes of nature, Krishna mentions this in several places in the Bhagavatam, the modes of nature actually manifest its influence in the mind. So that's how we're actually getting manipulated by the modes of material nature, is through the mind. So as long as we're on the mental platform, then we can't actually have any good qualities substantially, because as soon as the mind is in another situation that it doesn't like, it exhibits its real bhava, which might be an asura bhava, you know, deep down within. Just like Hiranyakashipu, I have to mention this example also. Hiranyakashipu, when he saw Prahlad, the verse says with great humility he lifted Prahlad up. With great humility, if you read in the Bhagavatam, and he had tears in his eyes, and he was smelling Prahlad's head. He was like, this is an ideal father. Even my father would not do like that for me. Hiranyakashipu seemed so affectionate. My dear son, what is the best of all subjects that you have learned from your gurus? And he thought he was going to say something foolish like goo goo gaga, you know, something insignificant. What a five-year-old. I learned how to color, you know, pictures from the Cat in the Hat book or something. Or I learned how to read A Duck is a Duck. I don't know if you remember all these things. You don't remember? When we were in kindergarten, we had to learn all. They purposely train us up in foolishness. So we were learning all sorts of foolish. A duck is a duck, you know, a cat in a hat. And this way trying to, you know, in this way brainwashing him, dumbing him down to the lowest possible common denominator, you know, make it easier to manipulate. So he thought that Prahlad was going to say something similar. Duck is a duck, a cat in a hat. Prahlad Maharaj said, the best of all subject matters that I learned from my guru is Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. Ah! As soon as he heard that Vishnu, he threw Prahlad on the ground and said, kill him. Oh, what happened to the tears in the eyes and the smelling of the head, all the affection? Because he was on the Manorata, the chariot of the mind. So as soon as the mind switches, it changes the situation. So my point is that I was speaking about humility. Humility is not just a mental adjustment. It's actually born of realization. And one type of realization that is essential for engendering real humility is a realization that Krishna is actually the maintainer of everyone. And that my serving Krishna is actually his mercy and not on my birthright. It's a privilege. It's a great fortune. Then as that realization increases in our heart, then proportionally the humility will increase in the heart. I mean, when you know, and one sense when you know you're indispensable, in the material world, to know you're indispensable creates insecurity. It creates acute insecurity. So then people are always, while they're working one job, they're looking for another job. Or they got a couple of things lined up. Or sometimes they're working several jobs at a time. Just on Harinam, we heard a couple of people saying how they have few jobs, you know. That's mind-boggling, you know. So when you're indispensable on the material platform, it creates insecurity. So how is it not the case with spiritual? Because we're also understanding that we're actually indispensable. Krishna doesn't even require us. So how can we remain secure in our relationship with Krishna, knowing that he can just drop us off like that and game over, so to speak? So then that has to be combined with another one of Krishna's qualities, namely his quality of mercy. You can't just understand one feature of Krishna. You have to understand Krishna completely. How do you learn about Krishna completely? Krishna says in Gita just here, Samagramam Asamshayam. And what is that? Vita, what is that? Tatrinu, what is it before that? I forget the word. Maya Saktamana Partha, Yogam Yujam Marashaya, Asamshayam Samagramam Ite, Gashashi Tatrinu, and some word I'm missing there. You don't know. This is one verse that Prabhupada quoted the most, is mentioned. This 7-1. Chandramali Maharaj told us that this is the verse he quoted the most. And anyway, so Krishna says that you will know me in full, free from doubt, by hearing from me. So we have to know about Krishna in full. So we hear about this quality of Krishna maintaining us, and therefore we're indispensable. But also Krishna is supremely merciful. Unlike the mundane maintainers of the material world, they're not supremely merciful. That's not possible for them. Therefore, when we're indispensable, it creates insecurity. But understanding that we're indispensable in relationship to Krishna doesn't create insecurity when we understand that Krishna is supremely merciful simultaneously. And he actually wants us to come back home, back to Godhead, more than we want to go back home, back to Godhead. Actually, we don't want to go back home, back to Godhead at all. Hardly we want to go back home, back to Godhead. The types of things that we think to do and so on, we don't always show the seriousness. And yet, even with our shortcomings in our endeavor to attain Krishna, Krishna mercifully is maintaining us. He keeps us in devotional service somehow or other. So then there are different ways we want to be maintained. Physical maintenance, of course, is just one aspect of maintenance. But the living entity actually requires other things to be happy. If happiness was just based on the physical aspect, then the richest people wouldn't be committing suicide. You know, suicide rate is particularly acute amongst the affluent. So that means that there are other features that need to be maintained for there actually to be the experience of completeness. One thing is that the mind has to be maintained also. Or you can use the word contain in the case of a conditioned soul. Contained, because the mind is in a demoniac position, conditioned life. So contain might be a more appropriate word to be there. But we have this experience that even if you're eating something very wonderful, like, or you're receiving something very wonderful in terms of the sensual pleasure, but the mind is in anxiety about something, then you can hardly experience the sensual aspect. In other words, in order for you to experience enjoyment from the sensual, the mind has to actually be attentive to it. Otherwise, you actually don't, even on the sense gratification platform, if the mind isn't attentive to that activity, then you don't experience much from that particular engagement. You don't become so conscious of it on account of the inattentive mind. So, example is you're eating lasagna or something like that, something that we all like, pizza, you know, and it's really good, but you're in anxiety about something very serious, you know, maybe something, someone did something horrible, something you're in anxiety about, the mind's anxiety. Although you're eating a pizza, you don't experience happiness from that pizza because the mind is in anxiety. So that means that the mental health is more essential than the physical health. You may break your arm and you can still be operational and quite happy, but if your mental situation is too disturbed, then you won't get happiness even from material sense gratification. And that you can see, as I quoted, suicide rate is acute amongst influence. So we need a situation where the mind can be steady and peaceful. Krishna says in the Gita also that you cannot be happy without a peaceful mind. And so long as the mind is wanting and wanting and wanting and wanting and wanting, the mind cannot be peaceful. In fact, that's what insanity actually is. When the desires of the mind extend his actual karmic due, so to speak. He's due something according to his karma, but his desires extend beyond that. And so thus not being able to achieve it on account of the limitations placed on him by material nature, he becomes insane, actually. This is actually the cause of insanity. When the desires sue, because desires drive a person crazy. I'm sure we all have experience of having some, like a lusty desire, for example. When the lusty desire is there, you become very crazy. Or, anyway, that's probably the best example to deal with, young man. Everyone can relate to such a desire quite intimately. And then the mind goes crazy. So imagine it's a huge desire you have, but you can't get it because of the limitations placed by material nature. That's actually what insanity is. So that in order for the mind to be peaceful, one has to exhaust the various wants and become satisfied with the bare necessities of life. This is considered an austerity of mind we were hearing about yesterday, to learn how to be satisfied. And Prabhupada says the mind becomes satisfied by detachment from sense gratification, which isn't easy. So that means we need help. We need help on that platform also. We need help from Krishna. Because we have so many desires. It's not like you could just flush them out. That would be great. Hit the flush button, you know, like you see Indians doing this thing sometimes. I don't know what that's all about. But it would be nice if it was like the flush button, you know? You have so many material desires, you just and all the material desires get flushed out and you can like focus a little bit. That would be very nice, wouldn't it? It would be so convenient. Just because the material desire is like stool. They're like stool only. We would rather flesh it out, but we can't. It's just like stool sitting there. And then someone else coming, passing more stool in the thing, you know? Some people even have this idea, like hippies. Mother Donna Kelly was telling us one time about some young man at UIC who had this program of flushing the toilet as little as possible because they didn't want to waste water. And she was, she said, but they drink a lot of beer, which itself causes a lot of water consumption. So she was pointing this out as an example of material contradictions. They drink a lot of beer, which it takes up a lot of water to make, apparently. I don't know that, but she was, Mother Don K was explaining. But they were wanting to make sure not to flush the toilet as little as possible so we can save water. So you can imagine walking in that bathroom. Of course you don't if you're a human being. Better to go outside. Better to go in the alley, you know, with a gumshoe. to go to such a place. Anyway, material desires are like that only. It's like some stool is there in the mind, and someone else has come and puts more stool, and it's just sitting there. And you have no flusher, you know? They're just sitting there. And so naturally the mind cannot be peaceful. So we need the help of Krishna just to maintain peace of mind. This is a different level. So on the material platform, physical, just the sheer physical platform, you need Krishna's maintenance, because through the demigods, he's supplying all the material facilities for our physical maintenance. And through the process of yajna, that can be maintained. And for the mental peace, which is so essential for our well-being, you also need help from Krishna, because the material desires don't go just by pulling on the ear or something like that. You need Krishna to kindly remove the material desires, which are the anarthas. They can only be exterminated by the mercy of Krishna. Ultimately, we need the relationship with Krishna to be maintained, because the worst thing that happens to the living entity is forgetfulness of Krishna. Sinful activities are inevitable for the conditioned soul, but if he can manage to remember Krishna, then there is every chance that he can be rescued despite being encumbered by various sinful reactions. That is the meaning of the word verse, apichet sudaracharo bhajate mam ananyabhak. Ananyabhak means, actually it is described by Baladeva Vibhushana, the devotee, even though if he does the most abominable activity, his ananyabhak is that he never forgets the Supreme Lord. So just as he is thinking of the Supreme Lord is thinking of him. And he's thinking of the Supreme Lord in a spirit of repentance and contrition for his being entangled in sinful activities. Baladeva Vibhushana explains in this way. So it's not like he's thinking of the Supreme Lord and going on with this nonsense, but in a spirit of repentance, thinking of the Supreme Lord. So the Lord acknowledging that humility, he also thinks of that devotee. And by, the Supreme Lord quickly brings that devotee to Shipram Bhavati Dharmatma, quickly brings him to the path of Dharma again, by which he becomes rightly situated. So ultimately, that is the greatest loss for the living entity, is his relationship with Krishna. So aside from the physical and the mental, which is also essential for our well-being, but the greatest loss is our relationship with Krishna, our forgetfulness of Krishna. And our relationship with Krishna is maintained through various agencies. That's also being mentioned here, but I'm taking it in a different, unique way. A different way. Here, Prabhupada is speaking about how the sun is maintaining the whole universe. But in other words, the relationship with Krishna is maintained through his various agencies, his various energies. So the material energy is one. And the other energy are like his spiritual shaktis, which include the devotees of the Lord and the Guru. They are constituents of the absolute truth. So our relationship with Krishna is actually through these agencies. And if our relationship with these agencies becomes compromised in any way, then our relationship with Krishna becomes compromised. Then all is lost. If you do a lot of sinful activity, but somehow or other you maintain regard for the agency by which you're connected to Krishna, then nothing is really lost. It is covered over for some time, but it is not lost. But if you have everything, but somehow or other you've lost that relationship with the agency by which you're connected to Krishna, then everything is actually lost. And you may feel yourself secure by the fallible soldiers that you surround yourself with, you know. It may be money, it may be followers, it may be the opposite sex, it may be your erudition. And various things we may surround ourselves to create a sense of security. Just like Duryodhana, you know, Duryodhana in the first chapter, he's totally freaking out, seeing how the army is so expertly arranged by Drishtadyumna. So instead of admitting that, he tries to create a sense of security by saying, look at our man, there's Bhishma, he starts going on a list of all the assets that he has, right? He mentions a few of the assets of the Pandavas, then he goes through a long list of his assets. Because a person thinks that by having more assets, I'm more secure. That's the general tendency. So therefore, taking shelter of money, taking shelter of knowledge, taking shelter of mundane people and so on, because the more assets I have, the more secure I am. So we might be able to bewilder the mind, because the mind is easily deluded. So we might be able to delude the mind by surrounding ourselves with various assets to say that we're okay. But if the relationship with Krishna is somehow compromised, and that means if the relationship with the agency by which we're connected to Krishna is compromised, then all is actually, we're in a very dangerous situation. So we may be sinful and all these things. You should not be offensive, because that will compromise the relationship with the agency of Krishna, if you are offensive. But if you are sinful, then there is no loss if you somehow maintain your regard. Just like Magari the Hunter, for example. Or so many examples we were hearing the other day from Madhavendra Puri, Prabhupada Leela, so many endless examples. Uli Mantakan, Hayagriva. Prabhupada said his relationship with Hayagriva was eternal. That's pretty powerful. Even though Hayagriva Prabhu was many times coming and going, but Prabhupada loved Hayagriva so much, he said that my relationship with Hayagriva is eternal, which is, that's pretty powerful. You know, it's not like Srila Prabhupada said that about everyone. we might philosophize Chakshudana Dilo Jay Jame Jame Prabhu say, and create like in our head, my relationship with Prabhupada is also eternal. That is okay. You're saying that, but did Prabhupada say that about you? But Prabhupada did say that about Hayagriva Prabhu. Somehow or other, he may have gone astray. In the end, he left his body gloriously. I think he took sannyas just a few days before he departed, because Prabhupada always wanted him to take sannyas. So he wanted to fulfill that desire of Prabhupada. So just a few days before he departed, he took sannyas. Anyway, my point is that Krishna is our maintainer. That is the message here, a simple message. I'm taking this mostly from the last statement of Prabhupada. Actually, Narayana within the sun is maintaining the entire universe. Therefore, Narayana should be worshipped by the Gayatri Mantra or the Rig Mantra. Or in the Kali Yuga, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. This is our way of acknowledging Krishna as our maintainer by our ardently and deeply taking shelter of the holy names of Krishna. Taking shelter also of the devotees who will help bring us to the platform of pure chanting of the holy names of Krishna. This is the way we acknowledge Krishna as our maintainer. And thus, pass our life gloriously, simply and gloriously. Hare Krishna. So that's all I got to say here. Hare, yeah.
Thank you. I just had a question. You mentioned that devotional service is not a birthright, but a privilege. And if we understand that and develop appreciation, then we'll be greatly benefited. So I was wondering if you could explain that. I know in Nectar of Devotion, and we hear sometimes also this verse that just as everyone has the right to take a bath in this month of Magh, everyone has their qualifications for devotional service. That everyone is qualified. Everyone has just has a right to take a bath. Everyone has a right for devotion.
That is also the mercy of Krishna. See, in the processes of karma and gyan, you require so much adhikar. For gyan, you should have done karma yoga and purify yourself in the modes of material nature, by which you gain the realization of the self different from matter, and thus qualify yourself for gyan. At that time, you can abandon karma yoga and you take up the process of gyan. As you advance more in gyan, then you become qualified for doing yoga, Ashtanga yoga processes. Ashtanga yoga processes requires a deep realization of the self different from matter, because the practices are very intense and austere. Going to the forest is itself a fearful thing. It sounds like very wonderful. The yogis went to the forest and practiced spiritual life. But actually, it would be quite frightening, actually, if we had to practice in the forest. Wild animals are there and so on. So then, and the questions, these are actually, they're not fully spiritual processes. They're processes that elevate you in the mode to material nature. And then at a certain juncture, allow you to take shelter of bhakti, which is a spiritual process. But to do these various, because they are material processes that facilitate gradual promotion through the modes of material nature onward towards spiritual life, as a material process, they do require material qualifications, as any material thing does. But bhakti you can take from the very beginning, which is quite interesting. Because although all these processes are supposed to lead you to bhakti, as Krishna presents it in the first six chapters of Gita, you can take bhakti from the very beginning, which is interesting, because it's ahaitukya pratyata. Bhakti is described by this by Sutta Goswami, right? Savai pum samparo dharmo yato bhaktir adokshaje ahaituki, causeless. So it has no material cause. So it's not dependent on anything material. In other words, this bhakti. Ahaituki bhakti, not dependent upon anything. So from the very beginning, someone can take bhakti. And it just requires a little bit of faith Krishna mentions these qualifications in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The qualification, so to speak, is a little bit of Shraddha and hearing about Krishna. And also a little indifference towards matter. Not that you are averse to matter, that's for Gyanis, they're averse. And not that you want to enjoy it, that's for the Karmis. But there's an indifference there. Because when you become Krishna conscious, you use the whole environment for Krishna. When you become really Krishna conscious. So you can't be averse to it, nor can you be attached to it as an enjoyer. So when you have a little bit of faith and a little indifference, then you can take up bhakti. Now, how do you get that faith? And where is that coming from? So ultimately, that is coming from Krishna's devotee. So it is Krishna extending his mercy to that living entity through the devotee of the Lord who engenders a little faith in his heart for the narrations of Krishna. So because bhakti is also a mercy process, so the point that it's not our birthright still remains. Because our ability to come in contact with the devotional service of the Lord is also mercy. It comes through the association of sadhus. If you read the Atma Ram chapter of Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's a very remarkable chapter. It can be quite bewildering. But as you read it more and more and more and more and more, it starts to make more and more sense. So it's basically divided into about three or four sections as I was able to make out so far in my reading of it. And the first is Mahaprabhu just explains the 11 words of the Atma Rama verse. And then he gives a summary of his meaning, of the meanings that he's about to delineate. He gives a summary of it in so many verses. And then after giving the summary, he goes into details of the meanings. So that's a rough draft of how it's organized if you shall read it. So in his summary and also in his detailed explanation, he mentions about different types of spiritual practitioners who are different types of Atmaramas. The Atmarama who's a Gyani, the Atmarama who's a Yogi, and so many types of worshippers, Brahma Upasaka, so many types of worshippers of Brahman, so many types of Yogis. And when he describes how they come to bhakti, it is always through the via medium of Sadhu Sangha. So the point still remains that our coming in contact with devotional service is still Krishna's mercy upon a living entity. Now, even if you say, the other thing I was thinking you might say, because we said it's Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhu Kapunoi, that it's eternally present within the heart of the living entity. Right? This is also a true point. And Prabhupada gives the example of nectar devotion. It's just like a child who has the potential to walk. And just that potential needs to be brought out. So the potential is there, but it is never manifest until he gets the mercy of Krishna, right? Generally in the form of the spiritual master, the devotee. So then the point still remains that it is not our birthright. It is kindness being extended to us. So that's the attitude of a devotee. He always thinks that it is the Lord's kindness being extended to him. So when there are reversals in his life, he thinks that is also the Lord's kindness toward him. And when there's enjoyment, he also thinks that is the Lord's kindness toward him. So devotee is always thinking this way. He never thinks, I deserve anything. Oh, anyway, I already had it in me, you know. It was just a matter of time before it, you know, came out. That's how the mundane materialistic person is what they say. You know, generally you notice this, that I noticed this growing up on the Grammy Awards. This is a little mundane. But these singers would win their first Grammy. And they will say, they will always thank God. That would be like their first thing. First, I like to thank God, especially the black Grammy winners, because they were like, grew up in like church and so on. So first thing, I like to thank God, you know, God is really good to me because he won. So the second year, they would glorify their managers and their followers. And then at the end, they would glorify God. God somehow snuck in there, you know. And I also like to thank God, he's good to me. Then the third Grammy they win, they would glorify their managers and their followers only. You didn't hear about God. I noticed this. You can do some investigation, but I don't know if that's necessary. You can take my word for it. So the mundane person thinks in this way, whereas the devotee is never forgetful of the kindness that the Lord has extended toward him. Even in his position of destitution, that is mentioned by Narada Muni in 1:5:19, where he says that a devotee may fall down somehow or other, but because he's rasagraha, he can never forget the taste of that devotional service. So the devotee, even in a state of destitution, will always remember the Lord's kindness, and that will again inspire his devotion to manifest. So it's a mercy from beginning to end. Now, how are we taking advantage of that mercy and so on? That's maybe a different type of discussion, but it is mercy. It is not our birthright. Okay, he wants to say something.
Hare Krishna. Does the mind play a direct role in our conditioned nature?
Of course. It is the main. Conditioning means the mind. It is the mind that conditions us to the material existence. In short, yes. You can say false ego, or you can say mind. Because the false ego is just a generalized conception of being the enjoyer and controller. That's a generalized conception. It is the mind that makes it specified. In conjunction with a gross material body, it is the mind that will specify what type of controller and enjoyer you are. Right? It's a false ego. It's just a generalized concept. I am the enjoyer. I am the controller. But that needs to be specified for activity to take place. Right? So then, after you get a gross material body, then the mind will designate after that, will designate, you're this type of controller and enjoyer. It will give a designation. And that way you remain conditioned by that false designation. And you continue on like that. So although we can say mind, intelligence, false ego, you can also just say mind. Because it is the mind that is the main cause of the continued bondage in the material world. The Baal Shem is filled with discussion on the mind. It would probably be good to find all those sections and discuss it. In one verse it talks about the godlike power of the mind. And the Avanti Brahman story, if you read, he goes into a discussion about the mind there. And he says the mind has God-like power. So if you're coming under the influence of the mind, it has God-like power, so it's not surprising. And therefore, you need another God, the real God, to help you. Otherwise, there's no hope. There's no hope at all. Okay, anything goes? Okay.
Hare Krishna. Prabhu, you told that mind switches and situation changes. So the realization that it comes from the humility, and the humility comes from the realization that Krishna is a maintainer and Krishna's service is our privilege. So we used to forget every day that there's two things for the realization. So how can we maintain these two things in our daily
life? Oh, by purification. You know, realization, or you can say your values. Another way of expressing the word realization is what you value. What you value, that might be an easier way to assimilate what it means to have a realization, is what you value. Like someone may say they value good health, but they smoke cigarettes, so they don't really value that. And in other words, you can tell by activities, a lot of times at least, what people value. And then what they value will be based on some type of, we can say it's equivalent to what they realize, like that. So, what was your specific question, Angle? Yeah, so we need to get, our values need to be purified. That's what I wanted to say. You know the word anartha means false value. Because the word artha can mean value. So anartha means valuing something falsely or false value. So we have a lot of false values in the heart. Like we value sense gratification, even though it leads to misery, even though it's a waste of time, etc. But we do value it. It's a fact that we value. We value our material desires. And now I was reading one verse in Pritumar's section. He offers these beautiful verses about 10 shlokas. And at the end of his prayers, he says, just as a father maintains the child without asking for the child's input, you know. He just does whatever is necessary for the child. So also, my dear Lord, you do whatever is necessary for me, for my purification, my being maintained in relationship to you. So then I was wanting to learn those prayers. I was starting to learn those prayers. And I was like, can I sincerely offer that, though? Go up to the altar. Lord, whatever you think, ooh, hold on, rewind. Let me act according to my adhikar here. Krishna, you know I have a lot of material desires. If you take all of them away at once, if you take them all away at once, it'll actually be mercy. It'll be nectar, but we don't think like that. So we say just, you know, a little bit at a time, you know, like sanding. Don't just chop it, you know, gradually sand it down, you know. Don't just wipe it out in one slate. We become nervous. We become comfortable because we identify the material junk with our very selves. So to lose the material junk means to lose ourself as well. That's the difficulty in it. Like Arjuna is being asked to kill the Kauravas, but he identifies them as his very self. Mamaham, you know, those things are me. So to lose those things means to lose our very selves. We think in this way in conditioned life. So then also, we think in this way, we're fearful that if we lose our material desires, our life will be devoid of happiness and so on. We know intellectually that that is not true. But somehow or other, the mind is not convinced. So we're maintaining a lot of false values. And how do you give up false values? It's a process of purification. So we get realizations more and more and more as we move more and more forward in spiritual life. You know, one of our GBC men, I forget his name, he told something that was very cool. I always liked it. He said, Krishna consciousness is something that is caught more than it's taught. Which was, I appreciated that little aphorism because oftentimes we do have experience like that, like the light bulb just went off suddenly. The same thing you've been hearing for years and years and years and years, and all of a sudden the light bulb just went off. Because of sufficient purification and dedication to the service of Krishna, all of a sudden it becomes clear to you. So he said like this, Krishna consciousness is something that's caught more than it's taught. So if we can somehow or other, by the association of devotees, maintain whatever services we are doing and continue to move forward, even though we may be lacking the realization, or definitely lacking the realization, and therefore there's mischief happening sometimes, there's nonsense thoughts are coming all the time, and so on. But if we stick to the process of purification, like Prabhupada said, don't criticize a man in the shower for being dirty. And so also we don't criticize ourselves. Because more than criticizing others, which we like to do also, we also tend to take a hard approach with ourselves. Or at least the mind will create a situation that says it's hopeless for you. And that way, try to pull you out of the Krishna consciousness movement. What's the use in trying? After all these years, you're still struggling with that same old thing you were struggling with when you came. And the mind will be tormenting you like this, you know? Some things you've actually improved, but the mind will block your vision of that. The mind will block the vision. All the improvements that you made, you won't see any of that. And just one anartha that you were having before you came, you're still struggling with a little bit, the mind will say, just see. After 4 years and still nothing's happened, obviously this process doesn't work. It is not true for you. Maybe it works, but it's not working for you. Maybe it takes shelter in material sense gratification. So otherwise we tend to be hard on ourselves also. The mind tends to make it so. So we will say stay in the shower. Somehow or other, we have to stay in the shower of the association of devotees, the shower of attentive chanting of the holy names of Krishna, the shower of the Krishna Katha, Gaura Katha, and pray to Krishna for our step-by-step progress towards his lotus feet. What else can we say? Okay, Bhartak Prabhu, it's very rare that you say anything so you can end it.
Is the mind a conscious entity?
No, it's inert matter. Krishna mentions in chapter 7, verse 4. It's just it's a dull material energy, but it appears conscious due to the consciousness of the living entity, which is reflecting off the mind.
It's not like a demon.
Well, it is, but it's not alive. It is something like this. Maybe, I don't know if this is an appropriate example, so Madhavendra Prabhu, you can correct me if it's not, but it's something like this when you're on a road trip and you see a billboard that says, come and enjoy this thing, you know, like some food, a restaurant or other such things they have on the sides of the streets that are totally inappropriate to be mentioned in class. So then when you see the billboard, it's not that it's speaking to you, but the experience is something like that, you know? That sandwich on the billboard is like, you know you want this, you know you want to eat me, exit 57. Exit 57, as you're driving, then somehow they're out of your control, you just do the restaurant. So although it's not alive, the type of influence it has on the soul is powerful. And this is due to misconception. Just like another example is a drug addict. A drug addict is addicted to inanimate objects. Drugs are not alive. They're not alive. But one is addicted to them. Why is that? Because he's operating under a misconception that will make me happy. So although the whole atmosphere around you, actually the atmosphere around us is not harmful. It's inanimate. But it's the misconceptions that the living entity carries that makes the environment dangerous for him, right? Or if he's Christian consciousness, it makes that environment favorable for his service to Krishna. But let's speak on the side of not being Christian conscious. So when you're a drug addict, you walk into a place that's filled with many drugs. Suppose no one is there, and there's all types of wonderful drugs hanging around. Then, although they're inanimate, but the type of influence it has over you is profound. And that's due to the misconception that that's going to make me happy. So similarly, this is not an exact parallel, but similarly, the mind is also inanimate. But because we identify with the mind, that's the misconception. So therefore, it has an influence over us that makes it appear to be alive. It's keeping us in bondage, although it's inanimate. So this is another glory of Krishna, actually, that he can create an inanimate world to keep us bound up. Generally, you have to create a whole, even when they create prisons, they need security guards and so on there to make sure that no one breaks out. But can Krishna create a whole entire existence that's completely inanimate and we can't even escape it? Actually, it's as easy as walking out. It's as easy as walking out. As soon as you want to get out, okay, just walk out. But we can't do it because we're operating under misconception. Therefore, Chaito Darpana Marjana. By taking shelter of the holy name of Krishna, misconceptions are cleared out. The upadis are cleared out. And that way we become free. Like that. Thank you. Okay, and thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Is this supposed to rain today? It looks like it is. Getting all dark and clouds. He's been coming many days. He's a little...